Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of the Commercial Connection Podcast. I am your host, Spencer Taylor. It is great to be with you. I hope your week is going perfectly. So thank you for joining us. On today's show, we have a new friend. I just met Leo Rozanski just a couple weeks ago on LinkedIn. Right?
Yep.
And so, nice to meet you, Lior, and thanks for being on the show. Sure appreciate it. Lior is a partner at Flora Capital. They do primarily multifamily, housing investing. And before we dive into too much, Lior has an ebook. Go to his, LinkedIn, check it out. Building lasting wealth as a busy professional. So check that out. Lior, welcome to the show. Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good LinkedIn connection. I'm glad we were able to put this together pretty quickly.
Now, I've never met a Lior spelled L-I-O-R. Where are you from? Where are your roots?
Yeah, I'm actually, I'm Israeli, born in Israel.
Cool.
And, moved here as in elementary school. So the accent is gone though.
You've substituted that accent for the Bostonian accent?
The Boston. Yeah. I've been told I have a little bit of it every so often, especially when I get very passionate, apparently it comes out.
Well, Lior, thank you for being on the show. Introduce us to you. What do you like to do? What are some of your hobbies? What do you like to do in Boston? What do you like to do when you're not in Boston? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. No. I'll give a very quick rundown of my background. I kind of say I'm, destined to be doctor turned real estate investor. Kind of very classic immigrant story. Parents came here to the U.S. hoping their kid's going to be a doctor. So went to, did the whole pre-med track, even applied to med schools right after graduating, and literally withdrew my apps almost as soon as I submitted them. Mm-hmm. And got my first deal under contract. So the rest has kind of been history in the real estate investing space. So obviously could talk more about that, but I here in Boston, basically since we moved to the States. Hobbies, that's a good question. I mean, it's these days with running everything we're running, it's hard to get our hobbies out there. But I've been trying to get into beach volleyball, actually. I live right on the beach in Boston. And that's a big thing for me now.
I mean, people ask me, okay, what are, Spencer, what are your hobbies? And I say, I don't know, work. And they like look at me and they turn around and leave. They're like, man, dude, you're so boring. Okay, yeah. I don't know. I kind of am boring, but I don't know. I love what I do.
We love what we do.
You love what we do. Yeah.
It is. That's what it is.
So tell us a little bit about this ebook. Why'd you write it? What can people expect to find in it? That sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, what I've had over the last couple of years is I've noticed a lot of people reaching out to me as I've kind of grown out my multifamily portfolio. That's what I specialize in. We buy a lot of residential multifamily, specifically in the Boston area. And, I just had a lot of people reach out to me over the years and just continue to ask me for advice. What should they do? How should they invest? And a lot of this resonated too when, after I graduated college, I was actually did, about a year and a half of management consulting. So I came from that corporate world. And I saw what it's like, right? I saw that it's, we were running 60, 70, 80 hour weeks with not a lot of really time to think about, building out our own portfolios, right? I mean, we're kind of busy right in the middle of things. So it was really targeted at those people that are exactly that, right? Like busy, they're either, executives or just managers running 50 to 80 hour weeks, mm-hmm. And the last thing they want to do is figure out, the details of like real estate investing or anything like that. So it was really targeted for those kinds of folks because I just had a lot of people reach out to me about that.
Yeah. multifamily is interesting. I feel like here, at least here in Salt Lake, I mean, cap rates really low. I mean, something goes on the market. Actually, no, even before that, a listing agent, you know, signs that listing contract, and before he can get back to the office to, you know, put together an OM or something, it's gone. Like, it's already sold and over asking price. And I mean, why, Lior, why are so many people flocking to multifamily? What do they see? What do they see? What do you see in that asset class?
It, you know, it very simply, I see stability, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's stability because, you know, I remember when I was buying my first property, no real estate experience, no family ever, anything close to that industry. I remember talking about it to some people, and the one thing I understood was, hey, someone's got to live somewhere, right? I mean, that's as basic right. as it gets. Right. And it's, you know, it's almost a little dummy proof to a degree, right? Like, someone's got to live there. You know, as long as you're not making egregious errors, it's hard to see how you can lose when it's such a core demand.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's kind of go down the road of, speak a little bit about kind of why Flora Capital? What's your purpose? What's your passion as a company, as a capital fund? And then can we talk deals? Can we talk like maybe some of your last couple deals and what you saw on them when you were underwriting them, and then kind of what they turned into?
Definitely. Yeah. So one of the things that is a little bit, I would say, different about us versus a lot of, you know, multifamily operators or syndicators across the country is we specifically right now buy only in Boston. You know, and Boston is one of the most expensive markets in the country, right? I mean, you know, you talk to your average person buying multifamily product down south, they're buying product at like 100, 150, maybe 200K per door. Mm-hmm. You know, that's in pretty good shape, right? 80s, 90s, 2000s built. Here we're buying, you know, 350, 400, starting at 350 and 400, going up to 600, and it typically needs quite a bit of work, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're buying like late 1800s, early 1900s product. So it's a very, very different game. But, you know, what I see in it, and I'm kind of very passionate about this is, I think it's it's kind of one of those misconceptions out there in the industry that, oh, you have to go buy, you know, focus on the, you know, the monthly cash flow and the retirement and everything like that. And that's, you know, and that's all good and well. And I believe in all those concepts. But what really drives me is kind of that true wealth, building, right? And it sounds a little cliche, but mm-hmm. I always think about, you know, when I'm, you know, I'm a younger guy right now, but when I'm like in my 50s or 60s, what is the real estate that I want in my portfolio in like 20, 30 years, right? Yeah. Is it that real estate that's like, yeah, produce me some cash flow, but it's like in some tertiary market and, you know, somewhere in the South US where there's couple of farmers, right? Or do I want that real estate holdings in like a major global hub, right? That's just not going anywhere. So that's kind of how I approach our investment philosophy.
Well, there's something to be said about owning real estate in an area that has always been in demand and will always forever be in demand.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly it, right? It's got the historical track record, it's got the current track record, and there's, you know, and I can't foresee it changing in the next 20, 30 years, right? I mean, honestly, the biggest thing I'm kicking myself in is that I didn't go and expand into New York City during the pandemic, because that's probably the biggest thing I'm most upset with myself about. But that, you know, again, that just kind of goes to the show how I think about it. And it's beyond, you know, this is obviously a very conceptual topic, but you can even look at it more financially too, right? Because if you go into, you know, for those people listening that are kind of like the financial data wizards, right? you go in into your models and start really thinking about what drives returns in a deal, right? Mm-hmm. Is it that cash on cash yield? Is it that monthly cash flow? Not really, right? Like if you're looking at like, you know, deal level metrics, average annual returns, IRR over 5-10 year holds, it's really those market growth drivers, right? That's 100% what drives a deal. And again, most of our windows, we kind of look pretty long term, right? And if I want a sustainable NOI over 5, 10, 15 years, I'm going to go to those markets where I think I can get that consistent growth year over year. I don't need the boom and bust volatility of, you know, the South. You know, I'm not going to mention specific states, but obviously specific cities down there have been on incredible runs, but they can just as easily slide right back down, right? So I don't really need to play that game. I want to play a consistent long-term game.
Yeah. Well, let's talk maybe about some of the deals you've had. Maybe touch on a little bit of your underwriting process and kind of how you look at deals, how you analyze deals. Something like that.
Yeah. So, kind of alluding to what I was just talking about, our returns here are typically equity driven, right? They're not necessarily cash flow driven. So a lot of my deal structures, when I put together deals, I certainly will offer things like preferred returns and all that. And I can still typically hit decent cash flows. I mean, you know, we're never buying product where we're losing money or bleeding money or anything like that, right? At the end of the day, I understand people want to make some sort of consistent yield on their money on a month-to-month basis. So we certainly look for that where we can hit some sort of minimums. But again, typically we're looking at locations and then we're looking at what's the value add, right? What's the value add strategy to this building? Now, given that Boston has got very, very old buildings, a lot of these buildings obviously just need a lot of work. And it's typically construction-driven value add here. And that's really where we spend the bulk of our time and energy understanding and really executing.
So what's been some of your favorite deals to do?
Yeah, so, favorite deals are kind of my bread and butter, right? Like, so our bread and butter deals here, we'll go buy units at, let's say, $350, $400 a door, right? We'll go, that's one of my recent deals we just closed on was a little bit over $400 a door. We're putting in about $80,000 per door in CapEx. And that's kind of like I'd say average turnover for us. That's like, bread and cosmetics, right? Kitchens, baths, electrical, plumbing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And we're typically pushing these buildings to about mid fives to high fives per unit on the back end, right? So we're creating a fair amount of spread. We're buying them in, very centric locations where we know we're never going to have any issues. We're still able to generate a decent yield pay out the preps. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Are you holding these in your portfolio long term? Is that kind of your strategy? Buy, renovate, hold long term?
Yep. 100%. It's hold long term. In the 6 years I've been doing this, I've sold one property.
Yeah.
I don't like to sell.
Yeah. So, if it's okay, let's talk about managing these multifamilies. What goes into managing them? What's maybe a couple best practices and maybe some lessons you've learned as you've worked through now 6 years? Okay. The last 6 years have been pretty good. Interesting pandemic couple years, but what kind of best practices and what have you learned?
Yeah, on the management side, I've actually seen a lot. I obviously, like most people, I started out managing myself the first few years. The next couple of years, we actually, a former business partner of mine, we actually tried, we brought management in-house and hired an in-house manager that worked directly in our portfolio. And now in our latest acquisitions, we're bringing full third-party management in. So I've kind of seen the spectrum in terms of the management operations. And you know, I think there's, you know, there's obviously advantages and disadvantages to all those aspects, right? With the in-house management, what I really love is that manager's there for you, right? He doesn't care about any other product. It's literally just about your portfolio. And it becomes a little bit even more than a property manager. It almost becomes like almost a little bit like an operations manager, which was, I thought, really, really nice. Now, the limitation of that, obviously, is scale, right? Like, it's hard to scale that out. And honestly, I don't want to be in the property management business myself. I have no desire to do that. So that's kind of the disadvantage of that. Whereas obviously the third party management, you know, fully outsourced, like a lot of people do, you kind of lose that personal touch, you lose that kind of operational touch. But of course, you know, now that we're scaling quite a bit, it's kind of, you know, it's what you need.
It's kind of like you need to find the balance of what you can accept, what you can give away, right? And just kind of find that sweet spot of, okay, here's the type of property manager I need. And they need to take care of my customers, right? My tenants in the right way, you know? And so that's interesting.
Yeah. You know, you kind of adapt. I mean, I'd say as we've transitioned to third-party management, what I'm doing right now is essentially growing out our operations internally. So that's one of my big focuses over the next couple of months, is bring in kind of that expertise in-house. You know, so even though we're not growing a property management business, we're growing truly a shop, right? Like a true investment shop that has the capabilities of asset management, construction management, everything we essentially need to be able to, you know, to fully execute on these, without needing to have like an internal division of property management or anything like that.
Yeah. Couple lessons you've learned, couple good lessons you've learned over maybe in the early years that you'd like to share with us.
Oh, where do I start? a lot of different lessons. one of the things that for me, is always been important, you know, as a young person getting in the business, right, has been partnerships, right? I mean, that's been big. And I will say, you know, and I will very openly tell you, I've been burned very badly. But I've also had incredible success, right? You know, and especially right now, right? I mean, a lot of this is fueled through good strategic partnerships. But it's one of those things that you as an entrepreneur, as a business person, right? You have to learn how to adapt, how to figure out what, you know, who to work with, how to work with them. And it's something that evolves all the time, right? I mean, even, you know, I've had some successful ones that have phased out, just because, you know, you realize you're not strategically aligned anymore or aligned on the vision perspective, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that need to go right for a partnership to continue. So I encourage everyone to do it because it's a very hard business. But it's something that, you know, takes a lot of grit and takes a lot of lessons to really get down.
Yeah. Where do you hope to be in the next, you know, I don't know, 10 years? Kind of like not quite where you're ready to retire, but what's kind of your next milestone you want to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, a couple. I mean, from a pure numbers perspective, you know, I mean, you know, our next kind of insight target, if you will, is 100 million assets, which I think we'll probably hit within the next year or two. And of course, got the big B in my sight as well. But you know, kind of from a larger perspective, right? I mean, really, really, what kind of was driving us today is the idea of building out like a true turnkey shop, right? Yeah. I think that's kind of like what is most exciting to me, right? It's not really like, oh, how can I go buy another deal, right? Like another deal is great, and even if it's a slam dunk deal, you know, I'll get excited about it for a little bit. But that's not really what gets me up from bed today. It's more of how do we put something together where that just gets fed into a loop and it just gets executed on, operated on, right? It's just very sequential, and you know, the obviously like the return on equity is there, the return for all the investors is there. But how do we create something almost a little bit larger than just, oh, hey, we got a great deal and mm-hmm. let's buy it.
Yeah. Interesting. That's cool. That's cool. Lior, what else should we talk about?
Multifamily
is interesting. I mean, I'm not really in the multifamily game. But I love commercial real estate. I think everyone needs to, you know, if someone's out there and they own a bunch of residential rentals, my first advice to them is, you know, kind of depending on their age, is how can you elevate the quality of that investment, right?
Yep.
Move up the ladder, whether it's a fourplex or whether it's a small commercial building or something, right? Find a way that you can increase your returns and decrease the drag on your lifestyle.
You know, what's interesting is, and a lot of people do say that, right? Like, you know, there's obviously the conception in the industry of trading up and kind of moving up into bigger stuff. You know, I know it's prevalent in all commercial real estate, but one of the things that's very unique, I think, to here is, you know, the inventory in Boston, there's not a lot of like big commercial buildings here, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, the downtown buildings, but you know, those are trading at billions of dollars. So that's not really in scope. But you know, if you go down to like markets like Texas, Georgia, Carolinas, you know, all those markets, there you have typically large apartment built complexes, right? That are 200, 300, 400, 500 units. That doesn't really exist that much in Boston, right? Like a big complex in Boston is like 50, 60 units. Like that's massive, right?
Yeah.
You know, and they don't really exist that much. So my point being here is, you know, most of the inventory here actually tends to be pretty small, like 3 to 6, maybe 12 units. So one of the things we're kind of trying to do is actually, while we're expanding and trying to get those bigger buildings, part of the operation we're trying to build out is actually still continue to buy those small buildings, right? Because what's interesting about those small buildings is, are they less scalable? Absolutely. Are they a bit more of a pain in the butt to manage and execute on? Absolutely, right? You know, I understand the whole concept of scale, but those little buildings actually have a lot more creativity involved in them, I think, than most people give credit, right? Because you buy a typical 3-family in Boston, you have so many different exit options that you just don't have in commercial real estate, right? Mm-hmm. So I can buy a 3-family, I can sell it on an NOI basis to an investor, I can sell it to a typical owner-occupant who's looking to buy a 3-family, I can condo the building out, right? And you just have all these very unique exits, you know, that don't really exist as much in that big commercial space, right? In the big commercial space, you're selling to a guy who's looking at NOI, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right. So I really do. So our plan is to actually continue to buy these little small multifamilies, you know, which is kind of against a little bit what everyone in the industry preaches. But you kind of have to look at your specific market and understand the opportunity, because I think you actually get a lot of value extraction from understanding, you know, what can you actually do with a specific asset class?
Well, yeah. And very much to your point, what you do in downtown Boston is different than what you do in the, you know, a suburb of Dallas, Texas, right?
Right.
And so different, you scale it differently, right? And
exactly.
Maybe an element of scaling in your world is buying out the, you know, the neighbor property or the one that's, you know, half block away, right? And so there's exactly. ways you can scale it. There's ways you can scale it. And
right. Yeah, there's different ways to scale it, but yeah, it comes to just understanding your neighborhoods, right? Like some of our most prominent neighborhoods in Boston, you're not going to find bigger than like 10 units.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But each of those units, you know, Boston's trading at like $1,000 to $1,500 per square foot. So you're dealing with some absolutely massive, these are not small numbers, right? Like it's small unit count, but every square foot you're buying up here is incredibly valuable.
You know, my dad's a landlord out in Denver. He owns, you know, a couple single family homes. And his version of scaling is buy 4 homes on the same street. Right. And he lives on that street.
Yeah.
And he, you know, everyone has a different way of scaling, but No. Super interesting. Super interesting. The Boston kind of demographics, if you will, on property choice, and an old city like that with lots of history is different. Yeah,
it's very different. And again, it kind of just kind of like loop it back full circle, right? These are the kind of markets we look at and say they've been here forever. The demand here has always been incredibly strong. So even though we might not necessarily go along with your typical, you know, the typical scaling plan you might hear on a podcast about, oh, trade up your little duplex or threeplex for like a 30 unit, right? You have to understand your local market dynamic, right?
Yeah.
And especially when you're playing kind of in these coastal markets, I mean, you know, the same is true as Boston, as New York, as DC, as San Fran, right? I mean, you are playing a different game, but that's not to say that same wealth cannot be like is any different, right? Because at the end of the day, as long the financials are still very much the same, right? It's not under one roof, but it's still the same exact financials, right? And as long as you understand how the equity's been built up, how you can do it over and over again, I mean, there's just tremendous amount of wealth to be built.
Yeah. Lior, thank you so much for your time, for your attention, and your willingness to share. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can reach out to you?
Yeah, of course. No, thanks for having me on here. Best ways to get in touch with me is on my Instagram, on my LinkedIn. Pretty responsive on those. I get a lot of DMs on there, so definitely talk to me there. Download my book. You know, I think it's a great, like I said, it's a great book for people, especially those people that are like super busy and just want to get away, you know, want to figure out a way to diversify. I remember those hours in the corporate world, and it's brutal, and you just don't have a lot of time to think for yourself. So, yeah.
Cool. And to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us this week. We sure appreciate it. And take Lior up on this offer. Find him, DM him, and there's probably no question too small for you, Lior, that you wouldn't give attention to, right?
I've seen all the questions on this side.
So reach out to him. And if you feel like this episode is worthy of sharing, hey, we invite you to share it with somebody who might find it interesting. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. That'd mean so much to us. Thank you all again. And until next time, have a good day.